Okay, go ahead and tap it. Nothing. Oh wait, there it goes. Okay, I see it. Okay, next. Okay, that one showed up. Take a minute here. Okay, there it goes. Oh, there's like a delayed reaction. That's weird. Takes a minute. Then there's a coding. Okay. Huh?
Good.
That one showed up right away.
Alright. I'll just keep this in the back.
Okay.
Because if they need to talk, we'll just hand this out, say here you go.
Well, there's some numbers here, and so they may be coming through the phone.
Okay, Jill is going to call. Yes. Show me a minute to grab those in case. You can come. Okay. Call the meeting to order tonight, Tuesday, February 28th. First order of business is, let's say, the Pledge of Allegiance. Join us, please. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have several members on the phone. Are you okay with, we have a couple, we don't know who they are. Jill on the phone. So we have trustees. Joanne, you're there?
Yes, I'm here.
Michelle?
I'm here.
Okay. Jill? We're still, I don't hear Jill on. So we don't have a quorum?
We have a quorum.
Lewis, are you on the phone? Lewis was going to show up, so I don't know what happened to him. Okay, this is Jill. Call Jill. Just texted Jill to see if she's on. We have Millie on. Mm-hmm. Okay. And here comes Lewis. So we'll give Lewis a minute to get settled. And Jill is on. Okay. Yes.
What do we have to do? Are we not okay? We got it. Better test it.
Okay. Give Lewis a minute here, and then we'll go ahead with the, if there's any public comment, we can start with that. Okay, seeing none. I have a couple trustee things. First, I wanted to give kudos to Kim. I don't know if you guys know, there's a special designation for a rural CEO program, which I know took about 8 months.
CFO,
excuse me.
Yes, 8 months.
And I don't, you want to say anything? It was quite an accomplishment. I think we're really fortunate to have our team go above and beyond and get extra training and learning and do better for us. You know, we're a small hospital and all of that really counts. And thanks, Kim. I think she needs a round of applause at least. And then Robin was mentioned in Becker's Medical Journal as one of the 80 rural CEOs to know. If you have a chance, the article's out. It's pretty impressive. It's pretty exciting for our little community, I think. Any other trustee comments? Anybody on the phone?
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to thank the auxiliary for their consideration of the partial funding of equipment on tonight's agenda. They put $100,000 of their fund toward the $430,000 cost of the equipment. And I think that that's exemplary. I know we owe them a big thank you for their assistance.
Joanna, Michelle, did you have anything?
No.
Okay.
No, thanks.
Okay. The medical staff department. Say, Paul, you're on.
I do have one thing. I heard that you might see Jill Steffers and let in, but she's asking me if I can only hear old music.
You don't see her?
Yeah.
Have her, let's.
I'll text it to you.
Okay.
And then Dr.
Adler
is next.
Oh.
Chief of Staff.
Oh, I missed Chief of Staff. Sorry. I went right to the other. Okay. Sorry, missed you.
So in your packet is a list of physicians and the medical providers that we recommend to be approved for the prior 14 we met with this committee and we recommended for their approval. They were presented in the medical staff meeting a week later on the 21st, and they were also recommended to be approved.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you, Dr. Adhar. Now, administrative report. Paul?
Just do a quick sound check. Can everybody on the phone hear me?
Michelle, Joanne, can you hear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, good evening. It would appear I chose a snow day to come present to the board. So appreciate this opportunity to present to you today. It's very exciting for me to be here. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Paul Ward. I'm the executive director for MedX. This is my first opportunity to present to the board here, and I gotta say I was pretty excited. This hospital is a fine institution. And it's really been a privilege and an honor to help support the Air Medical asset that we have stationed here. And I know there's a lot of rich history with space here, and it wouldn't be here without the support of the board. So I want to thank you for that. First, before we move on too much further, you sit down. Be able to advance it for me. Not working.
There we go.
So I might need you to just advance it. Thank you. So obviously today we certainly, as I'm sure everybody is aware, there was a tragic accident this past weekend, and our hearts certainly go out to the CareFlight community based out in Reno. Many folks associate with a lot of that great crew, and should turn this one off. So many folks associate with many of those wonderful crews and wonderful people. CareFlight certainly represents the best that humanity has to offer. So our thoughts certainly go out to them. And as I understand it, there'll be a moment of silence a little bit later in the meeting. So
Certainly moving forward with them in our minds and in our hearts, and it's a tragic accident, and it's quite sad, but if you could advance to the next slide, please. First, it's been a challenging past few years, I think, for everybody in healthcare for a lot of reasons, between COVID and a lot of unknowns that the world was throwing at us. And I have to say that the opportunity to work with Robin has been a wonderful experience for me. I worked for the previous owner of MedX, Joel, which I'm sure some of you knew, and it was a time of a lot of unknowns as the administration seemed to have a new face every so often. And I have to say that having Robin in this role, it has provided a sense of stability and security at the hospital. We certainly feel that, and I would certainly like to reaffirm the decision that the board has made to support Robin. And I could not be more grateful for her and her leadership and the ability to work with her. Also, there's many others that part of Robin's team that I want to thank. I want to thank Becky. Becky has been instrumental in establishing this base from the very beginning, and I wouldn't be here without her. Drew is not here tonight, but he is also another instrumental individual who, without him, this base would not be what it is. And then obviously Tina, we thank her and everything that she did for us. And then obviously Bertha and all the continued support that she provides us as well. It really is a privilege and an opportunity to work with each and every one of them, and they represent the heart of this community. And every time I have an opportunity to interact with them, they certainly have this community in their heart and in any decision that they have. And I'm very grateful for that. So next slide, please. So this is a picture that was taken this summer, and there's a story behind this picture that I'd like to share tonight. So this is, that's me in my home in Elko, and that is my aunt, my mom's sister, Aunt Bobby. And this picture would not have been possible had it not been for Humboldt General Hospital. If I could get the next slide, please. I'd like to read a short story here to help explain why my family was impacted by Humboldt General Hospital and the care that's provided here. This is a letter written by my Aunt Bobby, dated 1st, 2016. This is a letter to the family. She says, "Dear family, it has been 30 years since the accident. It happened on a clear, cold morning just outside of Winnemucca, Nevada. The date was December 27, 1986. We had left Castro Valley, California the day before for Richfield, Idaho, where my family lived. A week with the Ward family was going to be the best vacation ever. After spending the night at a motel, we stopped at McDonald's for breakfast here in Winnemucca and began the second leg of our journey. Our van was fairly new with a rack on top with our suitcases. Dallas and Mike, their children, were in the front seat. We're in the front, and Nicole and Monica were in the middle. Troy, Chad, and Travis were stretched out sleeping in the back. We were really just getting settled for the drive, and I was handing out books, crayons, little chocolate cards from Christmas stockings when the van began to swerve. They thought Dad was just driving crazy. The swerving was violent, and I tried to push Nicole and Monica down. We had hit ice on that overpass. Suddenly, I was flying through the windshield on side doors, hitting the ground on my stomach. Within seconds, I felt something hard crushing on my pelvis and leg. It was the van running over me as it rolled down the hill. I looked up to the bottom of the van, terrified of prayer, 'Please God, let my family be alive.' I thought they were all injured or gone. Suddenly, I'm popping up one child at a time. It was Troy who ran to me first, and it was the most magical sight of my life. They were all okay. After being rushed to Humboldt General Hospital, it was clear that my injuries were severe and required me to be airlifted to St. Mary's, Reno. I remember closing my eyes, wanting to go to sleep on the flight, and the nurse kept me awake, calling to me over and over, 'Stay with us, Bobby, stay with us.' I didn't understand at the time that I was bleeding out internally and she was keeping me alive. Once at the Reno airport, I was taken by helicopter to the roof of St. Mary's, where I remember them running with me on the gurney, shouting, 'Code Blue, Code Blue.'" The story, she goes on to later document everything that she went through in Reno. But that moment would not have been possible had it not been for the responders in Winnemucca and for Humboldt General Hospital at the time. So this healthcare institution has impacted my life and my family's life, and it's something I'm forever grateful for. And so the opportunity to be a part of that response today in working with MedX in partnership with the hospital is something that I find rewarding and something I treasure. And so this hospital represents a bastion of hope for this community, and we're very grateful for that. Next slide, please. I'm gonna have to stand a little bit. Perfect. If we go back one more, I think. One more, is it? Yeah, okay, so forward one. So a little history, So a little history, there's been some changes obviously since the last opportunity that MedX has had to present here. And again, Bill is your guy. I'm the executive director, but Bill is assigned to this area to help support the messaging here. And so I'm only here to help present the message, but Bill is definitely your guy. So a little history. In 2015, the operation was founded and started. The best I can tell it was August, but if that is wrong, I would love for anybody to correct me. But I'm pretty sure it was August of 15. Then in 2020, the program, Joel sold the program, and it was acquired by a company called Classic Air Medical based out of Salt Lake. A year later, Classic Air Medical was acquired by Intermountain Healthcare, also based out of Salt Lake. And then the other key moment to highlight tonight is the implementation of the No Surprises Act in 2022. And that was a watershed moment when it comes to balance billing. And with the No Surprises Act, it rendered medical memberships unnecessary at that point. Prior to that, air medical memberships were a key component in efforts to try to prevent outlandish financial hardship to patients. And that was something that in the beginning, Joel worked diligently with the board and those here at the time to implement, to allow for a model that prevented balance billing to any patient that was flown, which was at the time in 2015, really unheard of, the way that it was constructed. And I think with the support and the foresight of this board, it really was groundbreaking. Next slide, please. So something that we're very proud of is that even before the No Surprises Act, we've never balance billed a patient. And that's something that we're quite proud of. And we've never collected a balance bill, and we have no intentions to collect a balance bill moving forward.
Mr. Ward, would you define the term balance bills
for
everyone?
Absolutely. So whenever you are receive care from any kind of health provider, in the past, that provider, if they were considered out of network, the out-of-network rates that were charged, your insurance would only pay to a certain extent. And if the provider was considered out-of-network, that balance that was remaining could be charged to the patient. And so what the No Surprises Act did is for any emergency services, it took emergency services, anesthesia, and I think pathology, and there was a couple others, and lump them into this No Surprises Act, meaning that any patient that receives care by those services has to be treated as though they are in network. And so there's no balance billing of those patients moving forward. Does that answer your question?
Sure.
Okay. Next slide, please. So the question then becomes, if there is no membership, how do we protect our vulnerable? And it's really an opportunity for us to exercise good faith and make sure that our billing practices and policies are in line with the values that HGH has. And so essentially anyone that does not have any kind of health coverage, we work with them because sometimes they do have coverage, but they just don't know it. So we verify that that is in fact not the case if they do or don't. If they don't, from that point, our billing policy is essentially a sliding scale model. And their balance is adjusted to an amount that is appropriate given their insurance, and then also in conjunction with federal poverty rates as well. And we ensure that no patient, whether they have insurance or not, is ever going to receive an amount that they are responsible for that is going to put them in any kind of hardship. And so it's very akin to what many other health institutions provide in that we take care of those that can't pay, and we ensure that there's not going to be any kind of financial hardship incurred, because that's a time when they need to be looked out for. Next slide. So one thing that we certainly have tripped up on over these past few years is, as we've transitioned between the changing of ownerships and some of the changing of leaderships, is the messaging around this concept of no membership. Because in the beginning, it was certainly sold as a membership, and it was free to the patient and things of that nature. And so we need to clean up the message. And so we haven't done the best job of cleaning that up from the very beginning. We've always stood by that concept of no balance billing. But with that comes a little bit of confusion in the eyes of the public, because they see no balance billing as no bill at all, when in reality there is going to be a responsibility for co-pays and deductibles. And so that has been confusing, and we own that, and so we hope to clean that up. We've turned down the ad volume that has been going on, just to help quiet some of that. So work through that, we can improve that messaging and provide clarity to this fairly confusing topic in general. And so that's certainly something that we will be working on and hope to have cleaned up this year in its totality. So that is actually the last slide I prepared, and I would certainly welcome any questions from the board that you may have to help clarify anything you might have. Please.
In reviewing the contracts, there's a provision that in the event of a legislative change, which is what you're describing, provisions that existed in the contract may be superseded by the legislation.
Okay.
That describes what the situation is that you're experiencing.
Okay.
But this has been in effect for 18 months.
Okay.
The first we've heard this on the board is in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, there needed to be a publicity campaign to improve the messaging. What steps do you plan to take to bring the public up to speed on the legislative changes as they affect you?
Sure. No, and great question, and you're perfectly right. There should have been a better messaging in the beginning, and we certainly own up to that. So a couple of things. Obviously, marketing is where that messaging is held, and that messaging is key. And so the first step that we've done is to try to make sure that we pull down any kind of ads that could be confusing in general. And clean that up, and we're fairly confident we've accomplished that. But if there is ever an ad or anything that were to pop up somewhere, we'd certainly welcome any voice to that, so we can clean that up. And then the next point after that would be then the digital ads that we pulled down that were erroneous. We want to make sure that those ads are then correct, and then re-release those ads. Ironically, some of the best platforms for ads in the Northern Nevada area is Facebook. And so those will be cleaned up before we release those again. And so that is the main vector by which that's provided. And then from there, we can certainly gauge how much we feel like that reach is having an impact, and then reevaluate if we need to go a step further with any kind of mailers, which have been done in the past. But those are fairly expensive and somewhat low yield in the awareness that they raise, because they get thrown a lot. And then after that, it turns into radio ads and other targeted Google ads.
Do you plan to include print media in your initiatives, specifically the Humboldt General Hospital Quarterly Magazine and the editorial staff of the Great Basin Sun, to meet them and to provide appropriate articles explaining the situation?
Sure. And that's when I say the mailers, that would coincide with that, just that print media topic, where any relevant platforms that are in the area, like you're mentioning, working with Bill and helping identify which ones are the ones that are the higher traffic ones that people pay attention to, and certainly bring awareness on those platforms. Absolutely.
Okay.
You've been doing this for 2 years. Correct, Billy?
Correct.
What kind of feedback have you had back from the community? Have you had people complaining?
We have not received any complaints.
I think that's important to know. Thank you. Any other questions? Any questions? Jill, Joanne, anybody on the phone?
No, I mean, I think it's pretty clear, and with the lack of feedback so far, it's pretty telling.
Okay.
I do have one more comment.
Okay.
So the bottom line is, when you say co-pays and deductibles, let's just say I have a high deductible health insurance policy. Let's say it's $10,000.
Sure.
I haven't paid my deductible for the year, and there's a balance that needs to be amortized of, say, $7,000. Mm-hmm. Would you bill the entire amount of the $7,000 toward the cost of your service?
Typically, we actually are kind of last in line to that deductible. Typically, usually it's either the sending hospital or the receiving hospital beats us to the punch, and so we don't have to collect that. And that has been our experience up to this point, but there are times where that is not the case. If someone has a high deductible plan and they're unable to make that payment, we would certainly work with them to ensure that there's not going to be any hardship endured by them. And that's through the billing department and that sliding scale that I was talking about. And also, we're not going to collect it all at once if that's not something that they can afford. And there's certainly payment options if that were to be the case, if they did not qualify for any hardship clauses that would allow them to be essentially ineligible to pay that. And so this is where the No Surprises Act is such a watershed moment, is prior to this, we really couldn't do a lot of these things. And so that legislation has led to a climate that has allowed us to expand the horizons of our billing policy to make sure that people are taken care of without a membership. And memberships are certainly a hot topic, especially in Nevada. But if you go to a neighboring market like Utah, memberships are not a topic whatsoever. And so it's certainly because of this federal legislation, it has certainly brought a larger lens to this issue. And I think we'll see a leveling of the playing field moving forward as far as memberships are concerned. The other reason we elected not to continue the membership is it does take a lot of administrative effort to keep it sustainable. And the other membership programs that are out there, they are a significant source of cash flow for these larger organizations, and that was not the means or the leverage behind the local membership here. So make something sustainable, ensuring that we're taking care of those that are vulnerable and keeping the program sustainable were the goals, and the No Surprises Act really changed, tipped the scales.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
I have just a quick question.
Okay, you bet.
Just kind of touching back on feedback, and just hearing about all of this just recently, how much feedback could we possibly have? How much does everyone else know? Was that told? How long has this been out there for the public?
And this is Jill Stepper. She's one of the board members.
A good question.
Michelle and Jill.
Question,
hang on just a second. Can we ask everybody to mute that's on the phone? We have some feedback. So if you're not asking a question, can you please mute? Okay, and Jill's question was, I don't know if you heard.
Sure, so it was kind of mentioned earlier about the timeline of this, and it went effective 1-1 of 21 is when the billing policy changed. Again, messaging should have been different, and again, akin to the previous comment about legislative changes. That time, I have not received a single complaint, and I would certainly, if there has been one that we did not get risen to our air, we would certainly love to fix that and get that right. But like I said, we've never collected on a balance bill, and for 2 years now, there's been no issues.
So I think, Jill, for your answer, the feedback I think must be good because they're billing as needed and no one is complaining. So I think that tells us a lot about it.
And you've widely published.
Yeah, so when I see that, my concern was that we're just hearing about all of it, so I didn't know how much it actually been put out there where we could actually get feedback. I mean, if people don't know about it, you know what I mean?
Well, they'd get a big bill.
I have a question. Exactly how many, do you have a count on how many people have been billed like that? I mean, I know it's been happening for 2 years, but is it 2 people or 50 people? Is there some estimate of how many people have actually received it?
In theory, it would apply to anybody that was transported in that time. And so it would be the call volume for the last 2 years, which shooting from the hip, probably you're looking around maybe 600 to 800 people.
Okay. It's a pretty
It
would apply to all of them, but not all of them might have necessarily received a bill for that deductible amount. What I'm asking is how many of those, how many actual people would have received that statement that would have been due and payable?
Sure. I don't have that exact number. I can certainly dig that up if that's a hot topic. I'd be happy to.
The only reason that I'm asking is because if it's been 5 people in 2 years, it's a very small count. And if that's like what it's considered to be going forward, then that's a whole other way to look at it. If you say, oh, it's been 50 or 100 people in 2 years, then yeah, we probably have a pretty good sample base of what that is. That's the only reason I ask.
Sure. Very, very fair.
But you have a great deal of experience in Ely, which seemed to have gotten wider publicity in terms of the community being aware of the implementation of the program. And you've had no complaints whatsoever that you know of.
Correct.
From the Ely, let's call it metropolitan area.
Yes, that's correct. And usually when we do get any, the hype around it certainly raises when there are other memberships that get sold. And it's sort of the person selling you the solution is also selling you the problem. And so our message is that the problem is not as bad as what it was back in 2015, back in 2010. And that's because of the No Surprises Act. And then also a very reasonable and compassionate billing policy that has been constructed. So I think it's a demonstration that it is working.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seems like that's it.
Thank you.
So this is the RFP. Is there stuff you wanted to discuss?
Just to bring up.
Okay. And Lewis is going to, I'm going to turn the RFP over to him. Okay.
We're on schedule to have a draft for the board's review at the March meeting. We've been in a research mode during this month. Robin attempted to obtain sample RFPs from the other members of NHRP. Unfortunately, she got zero. We've looked around at other agencies that have recent RFPs. The city of Winnemucca has provided us with certain information, and we have pending 2 RFPs models from the Humboldt Unified School District. Dr. Jensen has indicated that they'd be happy to provide those. He's directed the people involved to get those to us. Once we receive those, that completes the research phase with regard to sample RFPs. We're developing the criteria to be evaluated both on the professional qualification side and on the financial side. It looks like at the moment that we're looking something around 60% qualifications, 40% financial, but that could shift to 50-50. We're in that range. So the drafts will be for the board's review and hopefully pack it. And then we'll get the comments from other board members on suggestions and recommendations to be incorporated into the document. If everything goes well, then we should be able to release sometime in the early spring, mid-spring, April, May timeframe.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Lewis? No. No? Okay. Thank you. Bertha?
Okay. So thank you guys for having me in place of Robin. So as Paul alluded to earlier, I just want to take a moment to honor and remember the people that were lost in the recent CARE Flight incident. The pilot, Scott Walton, paramedic, Ryan Watson, flight nurse, Ed Piccola, and patients, Mark and Terry Rand. I'm sure everyone knows their families are tight when they fly in these crews, they're really tight. So this is really, really a hard thing for them to go through right now. So I just want to honor them by taking a brief moment of silence to remember them. Thank you.
Thank you, Bertha.
Thank you. I was made aware that care flight operations are on hold for now, obviously. And as far as I'm aware, all the other flight services are available. So, I wanted to the auxiliary. So I had the pleasure of meeting the auxiliary for a luncheon meeting where I met many wonderful ladies. I was kind of saddened though that due to the lack of volunteers, the poke and peek hours are going to have to be shortened and adjusted. I'm sure that the pandemic, the post-pandemic has influenced some of their financial things there too, and or has affected, not influence, affected them as well. And so I just want to kind of put this shout out to people. If you have a couple hours to volunteer, the Polk is a great place to volunteer. Bunch of great people up there. I'm sure Alicia could add more to this, but I know they don't require days and days of volunteer. They just require a few hours, and they require men. They require men to move some of their stuff, put some of their stuff in storage. So if you have just a couple of hours that you'd like to donate, these guys are an amazing group. I know from the Humboldt General side, Ann is working to market some strategies to see if we can get some of our people from Humboldt General to donate some hours. I know we do the soup kitchen, so maybe split our time with the Polk. They do a lot of amazing things for Humboldt General Hospital, so anything that we can do to give back would be great.
Ms. Higby, do you know what the new hours are going to be?
I don't. Maybe Alicia
can help us. They're 10 to 2, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday.
Alicia, is there anything else that you can add in terms of what to volunteers are needed?
We can always use somebody to pick up... like especially with yard sale season coming, just a couple of guys usually is really nice for the pickup that would make those pickups and just deliver them. A lot of people don't have trucks to do that. I know we just did a few of them. Thank goodness for my children. and we can just really a fun place. The women are wonderful, and if you got an hour or two, it's kind of fun. There's a lot of camaraderie. Some of our women just come up to visit. You know, not able to do as much as they used to do. The Polk, all the money stays local. We do scholarships in the amount of about $40,000 a year. So we do a little more in scholarships from our little tiny auxiliary than the mines do. And it all stays here in this community. Every penny, we're all, it's an unpaid, it's the only volunteer thrift store in town. So I don't know if that,
yeah,
but we can always use help. It's really fun.
And yeah,
hi, Alicia, this is Robin. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to add that with Ann's marketing campaign, we're going to do it internal, but we're also going to do it external so that we can let the community know that you guys are in need of volunteers as well. I know that Ann is meeting with Judy already to kind of start establishing some kind of plan to move forward. So I just wanted the board of Cole to know that they'll be seeing it around. Please share the word. The more volunteers that we can get to help out the auxiliary, the better.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then I just want to say thank you to Alicia for, one, inviting me to their little luncheon. It was great. And two, for the commitment that they have made to contribute $100,000 towards the purchase of our cardiac monitoring system that I'll be talking about a little bit later in the board meeting. So thank you very much. And then organ donation. So Robin and I had the privilege to sit down with a couple of representatives from Nevada Donor Network. We are currently, we as a facility are associated with Sierra Donor Network right now, and we're looking to see what we can gain if we move over to Nevada Donor Network. So Nevada Donor Network is endorsed through CMS, so that right there is kind of a biggie for us. We're considering them very highly. So many of you don't know, I didn't know, Valentine's Day is also National Organ Donation Day. And so what these ladies were telling us is that they go out to the facilities that they're associated with, and they do all kinds of training for the public, for the hospital, so that we can endorse organ donation, so get more people to be organ donors. And they'll talk about what the benefits are of organ donation, how we can help, how those organs can stay right here in Northern Nevada, as well as they dispel any concerns or myths that people have with organ donation. I know Robin and I were kind of chuckling, but I've heard it before from many people. Well, if I become an organ donor and I'm sick, people aren't going to try to save me. Well, no, we're not going to just let you go. We're going to do everything we can to save you. But there are some, you know, perks, if you will, on the opposite side of that with organ donation. Nevada Donor Network already works closely with our local funeral home and our county coroner. So us, you know, if we go with them, that would just be kind of a trifecta. It would be great to have all three of us in there. Since not all critical access hospitals have OB, I wasn't aware of this through Sierra Donor Network, but Nevada Donor Network offers birth tissue donations, so placental donations. Mostly the placenta, is used for tissue healing for wounds. When they do the donation, our little babies get these nice little onesies. Says born a hero if you can't see it. And then on the back, it says Nevada Donor Network, hope, strength, and life. And it's just, I don't know. We put the placenta in a bucket with formaldehyde, we send it, or we toss it. Like, if we could help with wound healing, it would be great. So one of the other cool things that they shared with us is that they participated in the Rose Bowl Parade this year, and there was a Northern Nevada young man who had donated, whose family had donated his organs, and they were able to join them in the parade. They had a picture of him on the float. They were able to join the parade and be a part of it. And so this company really seems intertwined with the facilities. They do debriefing for EMS. They come to the facility if, God forbid, it's one of our own. They come to the facility and help the facility through these rough times. And so anyway, just wanted to kind of share some of that information with you guys. So if you guys do see Nevada Donor Network around in the future, reach out to them, talk to them. If you have any concerns, they are great. They were great to talk to. Robin, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that?
No, I think you did a great job. I think that the big layers is, you're right. I mean, the Nevada Donor Network holds our CMS for this area, which is obviously important. The surrounding, I think you said that, the Battle Mountain Pershing, they're all Nevada Donor Network, as well as the coroner's office and the funeral home are all contracted with Nevada Donor Network. It doesn't cost HPH anybody to switch. They have an electronic platform that's new for donor services, because now if somebody passes per NRS, we have to, you know, call a donor service. They have an electronic platform that makes that a little bit easier for staff during that time, so that they can actually care for the family and those kind of things. Registration folks can answer that information. We're now an RN, that kind of better serve with family and being part of that process for people. It just, overall, their platform for data dashboards for our hospital and our community, you know, where the tissue, organ would, you know, who received that, what the outcome was of their donation and their gift. I think we don't see that from Donor Network Less. So I just think it would be a better all-around platform for our community and those gifts that they give.
Thank you, Robin.
That's it?
That's it.
Any questions for Bertha? Thank you.
So we removed the... We're working on this, and we're trying to make it where it's legible. So we did remove the prior year columns, but you still have those that are in your packet. So just for tonight, you know, the board meeting, we did remove those. So you can see January revenue. We were right at 11.7 million. And then contractuals were high. This is still part of the cleanup. We are estimating that we should be through the majority of the old accounts by the end of March, and that's 19, 20, and 21. And that is not self-pay, that's just the insurance accounts. And so we should be, we're predicting we'll be through those. Also, we have what's called UPL and GME, and that's where, that's state funds, where we pay the state a certain amount and then they send us more money back. And that runs through this bad debt. So that's why you see that is a real low number. We received about $500,000 back from the state. Then let's see, you can see operating expenses. We did have one holiday in salaries and benefits, so that's why that's a little bit higher. We had the New Year's Day in there. And then we ended the month with a net loss of 1.7. And I want to point out, we're still trending under expenses on the budget side. So right now, I you know, as we're tracking this, we don't see where we'll be over expenses. However, we have that GASB 68, which is an accounting estimate that comes at the end of the year. And so that is something that we'll just watch. And if it's pretty close, we'll probably ask to augment just so we don't go over due to that expense. And we don't know that number until after June.
Okay.
Here's the balance sheet. We'll still, like I said, we'll work on this to try and make these numbers better where people can see. We have a couple of ideas that we want to try that we're going to work with after this meeting. But it is very hard to see, and I apologize. I just want to point out, though, that we did send the Pennington Foundation monies back. And so you can see where that came off the balance sheet, because we had those funds reserved since we hadn't used them. So they came off the balance sheet. We combined this slide. This is our accounts receivable. This bottom line is the net. And then this top line is gross. So we put it on one slide, and then down here, we just put our net days. We're hoping, and then here's the numbers. So we were just hoping that, you know, kind of reduce the number of slides and then have it just as one visual. But if it's too busy or you don't like it on one, please let us know and we'll change it however you like it.
Seems like a good idea to me.
Thank you. It's hard to see. Okay. So then here's our timely write-offs. Like I said, we should be done with the majority of these by the end of March, that we've gotten through most everything and gotten it off the books. Here, we also combined this slide. We put, this was our cash inflow and our cash outflow. And so we combined it onto one so you could compare where we were with the inflow and the outflow on one. And this number right here does include the Pennington monies. Okay. So if we hadn't had to send those back, our inflows would have been higher. And then that's just a graph that you can see comparative. Sometimes pictures are nicer. Whoops, getting ahead of myself. Here is our DNFB. And right now that number is, it's flat for the month of February. So that hasn't decreased very much as of today. And actually it's 11.6 is what it is as of yesterday. And then there is where we ended our ratios for the month. So we have a couple of red and then a few more green. So that is the month of January.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes. On the contractual adjustments, we were talking about the collections essentially being targeted for completion by late March. As Mr. Ward pointed out, there are still billings for copays and
deductibles
that can be billed over 1 year. Are we planning still to bill over 1 year for this, those two categories?
We try, we really do try to collect the copays when they come in, because that's when we should be collecting them, is when they come in. And then deductibles as well, because we have the capability of running the insurance and seeing what the deductible or the copay should be. We don't always get that, and so we're working on our wording and also how can we work with the patient to try and collect more when they're in the building, and so that we don't have to bill. Because billing obviously is more expensive when you have to send a bill. Because if we could collect that copay, then we don't have to send a statement. Once we bill the insurance, and then the rest just gets ran through the contractual allowance.
But if the deductible for the, let's just say the 2020 year, mm-hmm. is something that's billable, would we be billing for it?
I'm going to turn that over to our business office experts over here, because I'm not sure if, are you saying is that if we hadn't billed the insurance?
No. As an example, I've gotten a call from Rural Health Partners regarding unpaid balance, which is essentially a deductible, from early 2021. It's more than a year ago. And they're going to send me an itemized bill. I said I'd be happy to pay it as soon as I get it. But I was surprised to receive a bill that's more than a year old, even though it's for the deductible portion only. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if we're considering doing the same thing.
Yes, we would be okay. Billing those, because those would be self-pay now, and those, yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Anybody on the phone have questions for Kim?
Sounds like we're good.
Nothing for me.
Okay, thank you. We're to the consent agenda. Item number one, we're going to let...
Just do the whole agenda, you know,
we don't have to say that we're not going to do
number one. Yeah, not going to do one.
Okay, so one, we don't have minutes. So if we can have a motion to do consent agenda.
Madam Chair, I'll move approval of the consent agenda as presented, with the exception of the board meeting minutes for January 24th and January 31st.
Can I have a second? Maybe not.
I'll second.
Thank you, Joanne. All in favor?
Aye.
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 And I hope Joanne. Joanne, you there?
Am I? Yeah, aye.
Thanks. Okay, motion passes. Business item reports. Item number one, hospital administration request for approval of patient safety protocol. That's CEO administration.
Teresa's going to present
okay.
that. So this is board approval. The patient safety protocol is actually, it establishes our patient safety committee, who's expected to be on it per NRS, and what they do when they meet.
Okay.
That's what this policy is. It requires board approval.
Okay. Questions on that at all?
No. Okay. I'll make a motion that we approve the item as presented.
Thank you. Michelle, a second.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Jill. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion passes. Hospital admission request to purchase Mindray Central Monitoring System with upgrade of equipment, including 5 N17 monitors, 10 telemetry units, 7 N1 monitors and software at an estimated cost not to exceed $400,000. Purchase the Cerner interface for the monitoring system at an estimated cost of
$300,000.
$30,000. That's zero here and there.
Okay, so I just kind of want to start with letting everyone know kind of what the Mindray system is. So Mindray is our cardiac monitoring system that we use throughout the hospital. This is it right here. Thank you, Dave. So the telepacks that Alicia was reading on here are the small, they're like a large cell phone size. They fit in the patient gown, and the patient can be continuously monitored as they go to different departments for testing or just ambulating in the hall. The central monitoring station, those are the bigger monitors that are located in the center at the ER and the center on the acute nurses station. You can monitor up to 64 patients across all the different care units on those. And the reason those are important to us is that they allow the ED to help us monitor our med-surg patients as well as our ICU patients, and it allows us to help them monitor their ER patients because they're located at the nurses' stations at the desks there. The other smaller monitors, the N12 and N17, those are located in some of our trauma rooms. They're located in our ICU areas, and it's just continuous monitoring for the patients. The N1 module that looks larger is actually a little bit smaller, and it's our teleport package that we can take like to CT or to MRI or to respiratory and keep the patient on a continuous monitor as we're ambulating through the hall or getting through the hallway to those other departments. The third and the fourth on that list monitors the EKG, the oxygen intake, the blood pressure, respirations, temperatures. It's great. It's wonderful. So we are at end of life for our MindRay system that we have currently, and it really doesn't integrate with the older systems, and it doesn't integrate with the newer systems. So we have to figure out, or we have to update our devices that we currently have. The impact on patient safety and patient care is critical. It would be devastating for us not to be able to monitor our patients when they come through the facility. I mean, there's just no way that we can even do patient care without these monitors. And so we knew that they were coming to end of life. So it is budgeted for, because like I said, known that we were gonna have to upgrade soon. In your packet, there was like a capital lease. We are not moving in that direction for the capital lease, so please disregard that. MindRay is out 6 to 9 months for installation of the systems, and so we need to start the process sooner rather than later, because we're looking into August before, or even later this year before the complete installation of the system. And we're having some issues. I think we're down to 2 telepaths on acute and the ER monitors that we miss right now. We can get through to August, but it's something that we need to put on right now. Could probably talk a little bit more about this, but we have money earmarked from some net proceeds and potentially some COVID money that we still have. And of course, as I mentioned before, the hospital auxiliary has graciously committed to providing us with $100,000 of that now. And they also said that in the future, because we're looking at 6 to 9 months down the road, they could potentially offer us a little more assistance with that. So I just want to say thank you again. We couldn't do it without you, but that's kind of what I have. Does anybody have any questions about the MindRay?
Where is the funding coming from? Since when we had our budget hearings, we identified certain capital needs, but didn't identify funding sources for those capital needs. Bertha is suggesting that they're coming from COVID funds and that mostly proceeds from mine funds.
So we will receive net proceeds of mines in June, and we could set aside a portion of those funds to cover this purchase. We also have the COVID funds that we received in December that we still haven't recognized. We still have those deferred on the balance sheet. So we're still working through that. And if we were able to use some of those funds, we could set aside some of those funds along with the auxiliary, we would have it covered.
When will we know if we can make use of those funding sources?
As soon as I can get through all of the
administrative things.
All of the budgets, and as soon as I can work through everything. I actually had a phone call with the auditors before I came in here, and we briefly touched upon those funds, and he agreed with me that we can go back. You can go back to the beginning of 2020, and whatever expenses you haven't already used against the previous funds, because this is phase 4 of the funds that we've received. Any expenses left over that we haven't already recognized, we can use these funds and retro it back and then we just have those monies that we recognize.
Okay.
And I am not going to be voting, so just...
Why not?
Well, I think there's conflict of interest with me on the hospital board, or the auxiliary.
Counselor.
No, you don't think there is?
Is there a conflict in it?
No, the other?
We're just donating money to all.
Okay, all right. I just want it to be really clear.
No.
Okay. All right. So do we have a motion?
I have a quick question.
You bet.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
What other equipment is coming up that in the life that would possibly before this that would be more important that we should look at? I mean, is there other equipment that needs to be updated or... I mean, how do we know that this is going to be most important? Is there anything else that's coming up that we need to look at?
I can't think of anything, Jill.
This is so important. I mean, this is at the top. This is...
There isn't anything more important.
Yeah, you can't monitor your patients.
Than being able to monitor our residents in the hospital. Yeah. It would actually close our organization from being able to receive patients because you can't advertise it.
Thank you.